Welcome to Steppin' Out, a reality radio show where you'll hear real people sharing their true stories of what it was like to go over the edge and find their way back. And now, Steppin' Out.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to America's 12-Step Radio Show. My name is Mike, and this is Steppin' Out. And if you want to connect with Alcoholics Anonymous, you can reach them by going on their website. It's AA.org. Or you could just look them up in the phone book. And because it's AA, they're right in front of the phone book. So it's pretty easy to find. Also, since we're focusing on young people in recovery, there's a group out there called the International Conference of Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous. And you can reach out to them through their website, ICYPAA.org. That's ICYPAA.org. And we're focusing on young people in recovery. And up next, we have our friend Ahmed. How you doing tonight, Ahmed?
Doing great, Mike. Thank you.
Thanks for being on Steppin' Out. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you. It's really good to be here.
So where did it all start for you? How old were you when you picked up your first drink?
Oh, I must have been. I remember the first drink very clearly. It was summertime and 13 or 14 years old. And got a bottle, you know, got all my friends together. And we decided to get some Cisco. And
Cisco? Explain that to the folks out Cisco there. What is Cisco?
Cisco, you know, I started drinking back in 19, you know, this was probably 89, 90.
Okay.
And there was like malt liquor beer, and there was obviously like wine coolers, but there was this in-between hybrid called this malt beverage called Cisco. Had like, it had maybe 8 or 9% alcohol, and for 13-14 year old, you get a six pack of that. Everyone got very, very, very obliterated.
That's enough to get the job done.
It was. Now, but prior to that, you know, there had been the occasional, you know, there was definitely the fascination with alcohol. My parents didn't drink. No one drank in my family. You know, like Bethany, they mentioned, you know, don't drink. They drilled in our heads, don't drink, don't smoke cigarettes. Don't do drugs. And from very early on, I knew I was going to do them all. I wouldn't say that, you know, I just knew that when I got out, you know, they kept me on a short leash as well. And they were immigrants. So they worked very, very hard.
Where'd your family come from?
From Sierra Leone, West Africa.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
All right.
And they tried very hard to, I mean, I grew up, they had us when we were in, when they were in college. So they were in school, you know, they were 21 when they had me, and 23 when they had my little brother. And, you know, aunts and uncles all living in a 3-bedroom apartment, all of them going to school, working several jobs. So me and my brother were really, and we were the area where we grew up in D.C. at that time was just a wild, wild west. D.C. was murder capital. All throughout my high school, and my neighborhood was, you know, right there in the thick. So there was I didn't know this until I got sober, but I grew up just on a daily basis, just really fearful of fighting, stabbing, getting jumped. You know, that was just, going to school was just, I remember just having, you know, to be on alert, to, you know, just very highly tuned, you know, very, very, very coiled up, you know, whether or not me and my brother were going to get jumped, we have to fight, or if my friends were doing something stupid, are we going to get arrested? You know, the stakes were just high all the time, you know. And
now, you had mentioned in your family that there wasn't any drinking or you know, like in Bethany's family, it was kind of, sorry, Bethany, but it sounded to me like it was your typical dysfunctional family.
Yeah.
And it didn't sound like that's where you came from. And you also mentioned that you had this preoccupation with alcohol, this fascination right from the get-go.
Right.
If it wasn't going on in your household, where did you see that going on at?
Like Bethany, I had a very vivid imagination. You know, I remember I read a lot of books when I was young to escape, and watched a lot of TV, and I realized that there was a life outside of DC that was just much more glamorous. There was, you know, I always wanted to be older. I couldn't wait to be older. I couldn't wait to go to college and get out from DC. And I remember just the difficulty I had of the responsibility I felt in DC. And so for me, you know, when kids, other kids loved Batman and Robin, I loved James Bond, and I couldn't wait to swirl a martini and go to these. I mean, I was fascinated. And
it sounds like you were really old for your age, really, really matured, right?
I don't know if I would say that. I think I was just
at least some of the fantasies.
Yes, they were, and so that was my fascination. And obviously, growing up, you know, kids really, I knew that you drank this alcohol, and something happened to make everything fun. You know, you would people would have alcohol at a party. And everyone laughed, danced, and played. And, you know, I saw some effects when people got drunk, but I just didn't really, you know,
Didn't make the connection.
Make any connection, yeah. You know. I knew when I got out, you know, as soon as I got a chance, I was going to drink. And that's what I did. Got my friends together, we drank, and I started drinking right off the top. I blacked out. I heard that I had, went into the middle of the street and exposed myself, and I woke up at my friend's place, and I thought it was wonderful that I had blacked out and I couldn't remember anything.
How old were you at this time?
Oh, I 13, 14 years old.
Okay.
Hard to say, but I do remember the event. So that became regular. Get together, drink, pass out on the weekends, you know.
And expose yourself. You gotta be careful.
And so, right from the very get-go, I was able to pull it together during the week, though. And my parents sent me to schools that were very demanding, and I pulled it together during the week to go to school. I played sports like Bethany. I played football for 3 years. Mm. I also, at my senior year, I said, forget football. You know, I wanted to really, you know, enjoy my senior year. And I did. I had such a blast my senior year, you know.
I laugh at that because sports is obviously something, you know, as with Bethany, that you really enjoy doing.
Yeah.
And you gave up the love that you really, the passion that you really had for football. And you said, forget this.
Right.
You know, this is interfering, and I'm going to do something I really enjoy.
Right.
Get wasted.
Right. And, you know, I think what's very different, and throughout, I was one of those individuals that I didn't have any negative connotation about AA or anything like that. And I just didn't know it was problematic. I didn't know that drinking, and I hear people all the time in the room say, like, you know, I knew it was a problem. And I'm so, it just goes over my head, you know. Until I started my program of recovery, I did not see how it was a problem. So in any case, senior year was a blast. I was a senior. I had a car. I got my license. I was dating becoming popular. Obviously, like most alcoholics, gravitated from the kids that were in honor classes to I changed all my schedule to be out of honor courses, hung out with the real thugs and what I thought were the cool people that, you know, we would. You know, obviously we were smoking marijuana at that time and, you know, hanging out late, calling ourselves a crew, getting in fights, just really just on that downward spiral. Mm. Things had just dramatic change from when I was in military school to now. I was just, you know, in the very easiest of classes. And the only reason I was able to complete school was because I didn't challenge myself. I took just the basic that I needed to do to graduate. And
that's amazing. Most people are like, oh, I want to be better than I am. You know, I'm an underachiever. I want to do better than this. And you're like, no, I'm an overachiever. I don't want to do this good. I want to hang out with the thugs and the gangsters and stuff.
And I was very seduced by the lifestyle. You know, I was very seduced by. But there were two things. I was not violent deep in my heart. Mm. And I wasn't violent. And my neighborhood and my school, it was violent. They were violent. I ended up transferring schools from this military school. It got too expensive, and my parents sent me to this other Catholic school, but it was in a very tough urban environment.
Okay.
So, you know, things were starting to get out of hand. There's starting to be consequences of this. And so basically what happened I left D.C. after a very tragic incident. My jaw got, you know, I was in a fight with a bunch of other guys. My jaw had to get reconstructed with titanium. I was in the hospital. I said to myself, what am I doing? Decided, you know, went to college. And when I got to college, I can't even tell you, like, when the door closed on the car for my parents to leave, I don't think it was just, I learned to really... it was a safe environment to drink. Alcohol was free. It was encouraged. Mm. It was it just unbelievable. It gave me and it was just such a new environment for me. I was so scared. I really didn't know how smart I was, if I could compete. I studied engineering, and I wasn't very ready for it. And, I had to work jobs through college because it was very expensive. And again, found myself highly coiled up. And, you know, would drink with abandon when it came about. So I graduated college without many consequences. My grades were very mediocre. I didn't think alcohol was the problem. I graduated, started working, and now I had an expense account and...
An alcoholic with an expense account.
And I was doing engineering for a European chemical company, and they would move me all around to do different projects. So, you know, a lot of the things that you typically hear, waking up in my car with my seatbelt on, in the car in the parking lot, waking up not knowing where my car is located, waking up with people I don't remember, waking up in different states, hearing stories being recounted of what I said and did. All of these things, and each time I was lucky enough that my job caused me to have another location to go after 6 or 7 months or 8 months, so I didn't, I could leave all that wreckage there and start afresh.
Mm.
And just to speed it up, again, now there's starting to be some consequences. There's starting to be, I became known as a meds, great guy, good drinker. That's who you want to go to, the go-to guy.
Right.
You just want to go at any time of the night. You can give me a call. I'll meet you at a bar, and we can, and everyone thought I was a really good listener and a really good friend. But I never let anyone really get close to me. That had been my MO ever since kindergarten. I changed schools every 2 years because, my parents were really struggling. They wanted to send me to the best that they could afford, but they were students and. So every 2 years, I was shuffled off to a new school. So I became very adept at making new friends. I became very adept at, learning, that it wasn't very good to have people know your secrets. I didn't have a language for my insecurities and fears. I didn't know what I was feeling. I knew I was uncomfortable. I didn't know how to get better. So I just didn't open up.
Mm. You stuff the feelings.
Yeah,
as they say.
And so with that, as an adult, I couldn't form healthy relationships. I couldn't form healthy romantic relationships. I had very good guy friends, but I always knew that they were closer, that they found that they were closer to me than I was to them. Friends were very dispensable and interchangeable, and not in a very malicious way.
Right.
But if they didn't call me, it didn't matter. If I moved, hardly kept in touch. I was always off to start afresh.
Mm.
But drinking was throughout. And I stayed away from drugs for a long time. I came to New York, and that's when it was off to the races.
It's New York again.
And
it's all because of New York.
And when I got to New York, I lived in Louisiana prior to moving to New York, and I got to New York, broke up with my girlfriend. Just watched a couple episodes of Sex and the City. I had the New York Post under one arm, and I was ready to. I had finally. This is what I had been prepared for, it was so downhill from there, because shortly after I got to New York, I was introduced to cocaine. I was introduced to ecstasy first, and like Bethany, it was a revelation.
Mm.
When I was in Miami and I took my first pill, I don't think that at that time. When they said don't drink on it, I was fine. It was a little problematic because I really wanted to drink on it, but I was like, that can keep me away. It was just magical.
Why do they say don't drink on it?
I don't know. Even when I drank on it, I felt the same thing. But some people, you know, there are all these rules when you, mm-hmm. you know, when you, you know, people that you drink and drug with always have, you know, there's yeah. the guy that is the very strict, you know, mixologist. There's the guy that's yeah. the, you know, takes whatever. So I,
ladies, do you know why they say don't drink on it, either Bethany or Nicoletta?
Something about it does something to your brain, like it causes holes in your brain or something like that. I mean. Yeah.
Wait a minute. I have that without doing ecstasy.
Right, right. Yeah, because alcohol alone can't do that.
Right.
You know.
Right. And so my ecstasy was great. And I was very anti. And I was going to a lot of, not only was I going out a lot, but I was seeking the most, I wanted to go to the most seediest after hours. And I was with the most seediest individuals. And I felt I was in this underbelly of New York. And I thought I was so alive. And I thought, like, wow, this is it. I can't believe it. And what happens then is that I'm up till 5 in the morning. I'm not performing at my job. I would switch jobs at a comedy. I was like, oh, I need to leave engineering and get a .com job so I can roll in at 10 o'clock in the night. And I was still coming in at 11, you know. And
it sounds like you were pretty much living fearlessly at this time, at least from outward appearances.
I would say so. People would think that. I remember it being fun. You know, it being fun, but, you know, certain people did see the demise. My brother, who I was living with in New York, he saw a difference because we hadn't been together since we left for go to college.
Okay.
We got reunited, and he was like, wow, you're really partying a lot. Like, you know, you're sleeping late. And I was like, oh, you know, he was in finance, and he's very regimented. And I was like, just because I'm not like you. But then he would see my friends, and he knew something was up, but I didn't see it.
So you weren't able to open up to him either?
No, because okay. there was nothing to open up to him about. I mean, at this point, there was no problem.
Okay,
gotcha. Oh, there was no problem.
So there's no denial if you don't have a problem.
Right, yeah. Right. There was people weren't saying that I had a problem. I didn't think I had a problem. You know, I knew I overdid things, but that's just, you know, because I'm an intense kind of guy. You know? So,
it's that football player.
Right, right. I play hard, work hard.
Jock,
you know?
Jock.
So basically, I, you know, between 2000 and 2005, lost several jobs, you know, bankruptcy, you know, because a lot of my living was financed.
How old were you when you went bankrupt?
Probably 29.
Okay.
And, you know, living off credit cards came to an end. And, you know, I stopped doing ecstasy because I remember one day I was coming down off ecstasy and I was sitting in my apartment in New York and, like, I almost cried after an AT&T commercial, you know. And I wish I could say that was the revelation I needed. But I said to myself, you know, I need to stop doing this ecstasy and start doing cocaine. So my reasoning.
Oh,
that's a real sane thought. Yeah. And after that, I found a girlfriend that did that. We spent 4 years together, and towards the end, not even she kicked me out. I lived with my brother 6 months after she kicked me out, because that's where my controlled drinking came up, was really occurring when I was living with her. She was the one that first started saying, Ahmed, you have a problem. I didn't understand how she could think that. Mm. She's the one that started saying, Ahmed, when you drink, it's different. The Jekyll, the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing that we hear about in the rooms. And I didn't understand. And then somehow, some way I managed to get into law school between the time. And I was very happy I'd made it to law school. But 2 years into law school, I was starting to, you know, my grades were starting to drop. I'd got a new job that I really wanted to do well at. And, you know, the first 30 days of the job, I had already missed a couple days. So, which actually, if I wasn't aware at that point, that would have been a good thing. Just a couple of days in 30 days. I mean, you know, but I was now the problem was starting to become a little more real to me. So I had my bottom, and my bottom was basically a 2 week run. I told myself that I was just going to have one drink after I had an exam Friday and Saturday. And my exam on Friday, you know, I'd studied for it, pulled it together, had the exam. And I had another exam, 8 o'clock Saturday morning. At this time, I was living with my brother in New Jersey, and my school's in Newark. I went to go have one drink. That was the plan. Have a drink, go home, get a good night's rest for the final the next day.
And the reality was?
The reality was I 6 o'clock Saturday morning, I was in Midtown partying with two strippers. They had kicked me out of the house because I was ranting and raving that my law school career was down the tubes because I had an exam in 2 hours that I was in no shape to take. They kicked me out. I resolved that I was going to get an F. I guess attempted to get back to Jersey, and I must have slept on the PATH train. I ended up in Newark. I guess I went to the final, and I passed out.
And you're saying you guess because you really don't know, because this is what, blackout, right?
Right. The only thing I can tell you is this. 2 hours into a four-hour exam, I woke up with my head on the table, and I had 2 hours left for an exam that you needed every bit of 4 hours for. Mm. I scribbled something. Don't know what it was.
Did they use one of those cards where you fill in the dots? I forget what those
things
are.
No, law school exams are written out.
Oh, okay.
It's by hand.
Okay. I can always imagine one of these things where you're like, you know, you're coming out of a blackout and you see like connected dots and it looks like a picture of a dog or something on there.
I was so convinced that my law school career was over. I thought I was going to get F in this course. I was so convinced that my law school career was over that when I left that final that day, that was May 1st, the next thing you know, I woke up in New Jersey. I woke up in New York. I woke up, I attempted to crash at my friend's place. I had a bright idea to climb up the fire escape and go through in through her window. But I went into the wrong window. I was surrounded by police hanging off the fire escape. I then went to a club. I drank somebody's bottle. I got thrown out of the club.
Wait a minute. How do you go from being surrounded by the police right to a club?
They let me go because they got a phone call as I was sitting locked up in the trunk. They let me go. They said, "This is your lucky night."
You're locked up in the trunk?
I mean, not in the... I'm sorry. My aunt,
boy, I was going to say, that makes for a real good story.
I was, handcuffed in the back seat. And they, you know,
the trunk.
And then, so my bright idea after that scary moment was to, I went to a club because I ran into a promoter friend who hadn't seen me in a year. He said, come with him. And I guess I got out of control and, you know, long story, you know, these incidents, you know, happening. And, I finally woke up a couple days later. I found out that at my brother's place, I found out I had been sleeping for about 2 days. I thought it was a Sunday. It was a Tuesday. I had missed work. He had tried to wake me up. He thought I was, you know, something had happened. He had saw, I'd been very good at hiding all my drinking while I was living with him. But he had came into the room and saw all the bottles that I hadn't cleaned up. I went downstairs to have a more drink. And, you know, that's when he confronted me. They had like a mini intervention for me the day after that. And he said that maybe I should go to AA. Well, I didn't think that I had a problem. I went to my nutritionist. I thought I had my diet I thought my diet was the issue. And I told my nutritionist what had happened. And she was like, her partner, her business partner, had been in AA 12 years. And she made me promise to go.
Okay.
So I went to AA. I didn't know AA was about stopping to drink. I thought they teach you how to deal with your tendency to overdrink. And that was my jumping off point because I was like, whoa, what about when I get married? What about when I get successful? What am I going to do? And
so you saw a snapshot of your future and it wasn't pretty.
Right.
Okay.
And I must say that sobriety has been an amazing experience. I've learned so much about myself.
And how old were you when you got sober?
32.
32. Okay.
32.
So, you know, this is good for us because typically when we're doing the young people shows, right. You know, they're not calling you
right.
Old or anything. Yeah. You know, I got a couple of years on you. But, you know, one thing I've heard on the other shows is that young is anyone that has growing to do.
Right.
You know, so it's good that someone can walk into the young people's meetings and not necessarily be your typical age for a young person.
But what was vitally important regarding young people in AA, if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have stayed. If I couldn't find other people in their 20s and 30s or other, if I couldn't if I couldn't connect with them, then I don't think I would have stayed in the rooms.
Right.
You know, and it was like finding this, you know, the Soho meeting, and it was finding me, and I'm so grateful I got sober in New York. You know, there was a meeting midnight where I would go to the 10 p.m. meeting and stay there till 2 a.m. You know, when I was counting days, I would stay every weekend because that was such a dangerous time and traumatic time. And, you know, and today, you know, when that meeting was on the verge of getting closed, I decided to chair the 2 a.m. meeting. And it's just because I go to bed at night knowing that that meeting is available. And
you were telling me before the show that they actually have this midnight meeting that goes on for 2 hours, yeah, and it's every night of the week?
Well, the group is called Midnight.
Okay.
And they have a midnight meeting, which ends at 1:15. Then they have a 2 a.m. meeting, which ends at 3:15.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And it's a miracle. I mean, it's a miracle. And I just want to say for anyone that's new, I mean, you know, whether or not I thought I was an alcoholic or not, you know, I just know that my life got better when I stopped drinking. You know, and I've had so much more fun. The person that I wanted to be when I drank, I'm slowly starting to see that I can be if I continue to stay away from that first drink.
And how long's it been for you now?
For me, it's been 15 months. 15 months.
Very cool.
So I'm still very new.
And you have a sponsor and all that good
stuff.
I
have a sponsor. I'm making my amends. The whole nine yards. And, you know, I took the suggestions.
Very cool. We're going to hold it right there, Ahmed. We really appreciate you being on the show.
No, thank you.
And we want to thank all you guys for coming on the show tonight. And if you or someone you know needs help with their drinking, AA is available at AA.org. And if you want to connect with young people in recovery, you can get a hold of them at their website at ICYPA.org. That's ICYPAA.org. And if you want to connect with us, we're at 12stepmeeting.com.